Welcome to the Sparkle Pod, Move It Mama's safe haven for our weekly waffly chats. An avenue for us to answer listener questions, connect more with our members, and shed light on our weekly ebbs and flows. If you want to work out with us, join us at moveitmama.co.nz. And if you like our podcast, please hit like and subscribe.
Hello guys, my apologies first of all for the delay in releasing this episode. This is the third conversation with Deb Buckley called What's Up With My Brain When I Feel Shit or Low or Down and What Can I Do? So in this conversation, you'll find it super interesting. I believe it to be relatable to many of us. She has some really great information about what's actually happening in the body and what we're missing out on and what we might be getting and what we can kind of do to combat this, and things that we can just at least consider and have at the forefront of our mind in terms of being able to kind of turn these moods or lows or things around. It's a really interesting conversation. I loved it. I've so far been given some great feedback about these chats. So I'm really looking forward to our next chat coming up on Wednesday. But otherwise, I hope you enjoy this conversation. I hope you can take something away from it. And we'll be back soon.
Okay, I've been looking forward to this too. So big topic. Find what's up with my brain when I find myself feeling shit down. Low, obviously a big question, and you know we're crossing the line into mental illness, depression, and so on and so forth. And so I will just hand over to you as to what you would say with this question.
Yep, so same again, we're just some friends having a chat. If you are feeling that you are in doubt of where you sit in the world, struggling to navigate parenting relationships, are looking for more ways of isolation than you are for connection, then go and speak to your GP. That's the first thing. Because we're just having a chat. And thank you to all of the people that have reached out. It's really sweet. Your feedback and kindness and just taking the time to say thanks has been just really delightful. So thanks for that. Lots of questions which we've tried to answer and navigate through too, which is also really good. Before we start, I just want to say, I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of all of us when we say go Dan, and then we'll move on.
Oh dear, I need to look at the light. Like how looking at light.
Yeah, no, squeeze your bum cheeks. You can't cry when you squeeze your butt cheeks. No. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we're going to move on, right?
I reckon we're going to go. That's wrong. I don't think that's true. It wasn't going to work.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe it's worked now because I'm like,
but we just need to say that. So many of us are there, right? Rightio, let's get on with the job in hand. What's up with Wenna? We have chemical dependency in our brain, whether it's a flaw or not, I don't know, because it's wins and lows, right? There's goods and bads to it, but we have chemical dependency. And that starts right from when we are born. So our taste buds provide us with chemical dependency. So our taste buds are set so that we don't eat something that's poisonous and going to kill us. And so we spit out food and we like to take a long time to get used to different tastes because we think it's going to kill us. And so that becomes a chemical reward. For something tastes good, we get a high, we think we'll eat more of it. Something tastes bad, we get a signal that's a low. So we have chemical dependency, and we have a lack of ability in our brain to tell the difference between a good and a bad habit. And I'm always fascinated by that, but we can't.
Yeah.
Eating half a block of chocolate isn't the best habit in the world for me, but it can release the same chemicals in my brain, so serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine, depending on what it is I'm getting, the same as going for a run. And we'll talk about those reasons why. So that's the first thing about what happens when we're low. When we are low, and I will just say another thing, at no point in time has Jess asked me to mention exercise or nutrition as part of what we're doing here. That would be very lacking. It just so happens, right? But it would lack authenticity for me I'm not an influencer. I'm not here to, you know, beef up your brand. That's not my bag. It just so happens that that's something we're going to get to. So don't say, oh, this is a setup, because actually, you know, go and do some research. It's not a setup. It's just part of our conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
If we go back, say, you know, 50,000 years and look at humans, food was scarce and resources were scarce, but we still survived, not all of us and not for long, but we still survived. And our main mechanism for survival was actually human connection. We lived in pods of about 150. That seemed to be all we could manage. Post that, we got a bit grumpy with each other. And there are two chemicals that would be released. So serotonin and oxytocin, and they are the things that are released into your brain when we were hanging out together. So even if we were starving, and I don't mean starving over the whole period, but, you know, hungry, those two things would be released into our body and we'd actually get a bit of a high. And so when we were feeling low because we'd gone out hunting and there was no food, we'd come back and we'd hang out with some people that we quite liked or we felt connected to, and this would release a high. Fast forward to now, what happens in our brain when we feel low or out of control is exactly the same. We're lacking in those feel-good emotions, our feel-good chemicals. And there's four of them kind of really that matter, and I'll talk about them. And so we're lacking in them, and we're lacking in them for lots of reasons. Exercise, nutrition, human connection, external pressure, internal pressure, stuff we put on ourselves. Comparison eats them. Depression can change the size of part of your brain. I'll talk about that a bit later, but you know, if we talked about last time about gray matter being able to grow just as easily, we can eat it, destroy it without having it. So what happens when we're low is there are these four chemicals: endorphins, dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin. And endorphins is the reward for effect. That's the thing that happens when you go for a run, feel real good, right? That's the reward for effect. I'm going to do this, this is going to happen. Dopamine is in fight or flight. That's in the reptilian part of your brain. So that's goal setting. And so people who are high performance, or, you know, really digging deep, you know, doing extraordinary things, will have dopamine pumping around their body at a much higher rate, much more frequency than we are. Serotonin is for pride and a sense of belonging or connectivity. So this community would drive serotonin, for example, in our bodies. And then oxytocin, and that's love and trust and friendship. And so when
all of those four things you're saying is that we get those four things specifically in those sort of situations. I'm not going to get endorphins from love and belonging. I get endorphins more so from exercise,
for example. We call it that,
for example,
because we don't know any better, it's actually oxytocin. It comes from a different part of the brain.
Got you.
Yeah,
it feeds a different part of the brain. I've taken three episodes series to say this, but I've never heard of the reptilian brain until you've spoken. Why?
I think it's a funny thing, neuroscience. I think you have to understand that it's really new. So in terms of scanning a living brain, we're 30 years in, and there's only really been two reasons we've scanned. One is for high-performance athletes. You wanted to scan some of their brains and see how we can make them go faster, fitter, better, do whatever. And then the other is for mental illness. But that is such a small part of the population. If you put those two groups together, the mental illness might grow a bit, but it's still a really small part of the population. And so we're not exactly out there scanning your brain and my brain every day to day to work it out. And I guess I have always, because of what I do for a job, I need a wee bit of science to back that up. I can't just say you have to be more empathetic if you want to get more out of people. You have to create tribes. You can't go through tribes of I'm great to we're great. It doesn't work that way. You can't just jump from, you know, all from life sucks to we're great. You've got to go through the life's better, I'm better, we're connected, life's great. So I've always been fascinated, but I needed science to back it up. And so, hence why, you know, 24 years in, I'm still interested. But that is why I think the reptilian brain is, and go and Google it, it's quite an interesting part of the brain. As you know, it's our oldest part of the brain. And if you think about fight or flight, so dopamine, goal setting, so chasing some prey to eat, we get a hit of dopamine and then we get the reward because we get endorphins if we get it. And so we can get multiple for at the same time for doing something. But the goal setting, the dopamine, is actually in the reptilian part of our brain. It's fight or flight. So if you go to high performance athletes, for example, like you look at some, you know, those guys who run those freaking Speedy Gonzales marathons of like 2 hours, you know, barely, and you think, oh, I'm barely getting out of the starting blocks at 2 hours and they're finished. You know, their whole body is just riding high on fight or flight, and it's fight, it's run, it's flight, it's dopamine, it's pumping through their body. So when we're low in relation to our situation, we are missing either all of or a mix of those chemicals. And you go, well, why can't I just take them? Well, you can't just go and pick up a pill that's oxytocin and take it. Now, obviously, if you are suffering from severe depression and you are taking medication, then that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to rebuild some of those areas in the brain that are struggled. But let's just say we're talking about people who are having highs and lows, but are not, or experiencing highs and lows, or experiencing lows, or getting angry in their lows and frustrated in their lows, or just lose their shit for no reason. We're just talking about that mass group of people when we talk about this. So if we go back thousands of years, we've always been connected through serotonin and oxytocin. We've always liked those things in our body. And so we're effectively, you can't become addicted. That's the one thing I will say. People say I'm addicted to exercise because of the endorphins. Nope, can't become addicted to it. Yep, you're addicted to it for lots of other reasons, mostly around habit forming, reward. You like the feeling of it, absolutely, but it's not an addiction like it would be to cocaine or alcohol. Or your body's quite okay to switch it off. It's got a built-in mechanism so that it likes it. But it actually rewards the habit more than the chemical. Depression can cause the hippocampus, so another part of the brain, to raise the cortisol levels once they're in your body and racing, and it acts almost like a block to the absorption of these other things, which is why I am so pro medicating when you are highly depressed, because no amount of, you can't exercise your way out of a black hole. It will help, but you can't exercise your way out of postnatal depression. You can't exercise your way out of grief. They help. But there will be times when you absolutely need to go and get your hippocampus to get some help through the form of medication. And whatever that looks like, and therapy and psychotherapy and all of those things will help. But the hippocampus is strongly connected to memory, and it will make you aware of certain memories or events or association, but actually it's associated mostly with sadness. And so if you're at a low, your hippocampus is kind of blocking the ability for you to absorb all those other great chemicals, all the highs, all the things that make you feel good. And so because it's associated with sadness, it almost pours petrol on it. It almost feeds itself. It's a little, there's a few little quirks in our brain that we don't know why they're there. We haven't got to that point yet and we can't work it out. But that is certainly, certainly one of them. Disgust is another feeling that sits in there, and that's often connected with avoidance, and it hangs out in the hippo as well, as does surprise and anger. And so when we are extremely low or extremely frustrated or just lacking a connection to another human, and I remember probably about 15 years ago I read a really fascinating article on the loneliness of marriage, which wasn't my experience, so I was kind of like, what a strange combination. But it wasn't huge, it was a small study, about 1800 people who were lonely in marriage. So they had married and never thought about leaving or going or doing anything about it, but they were suffering extreme lows. And so their disgust, anger, depression was really grown by this loneliness, and it's because their hippocampus was just basically being fueled endlessly, and they couldn't get their way out of it because they weren't getting the connection. They weren't going back to the getting the connection. They weren't going back to getting receiving any of the, they were receiving fuel and they had a person in their home, but the oxytocin that they needed from love and trust was completely missing. And so they couldn't build themselves out of a funk. And so in that instance, they needed to move on or get medical help.
So you really do, you really think that you said in situations of kind of depression, very depressed people.
Grief, processing grief.
Yeah,
because it's a chemical. So if you are unwell, if you've got the
thrown around, you hear that, like, this is a chemical imbalance, you need medication, right? That's what they say.
It has such a stigma to it. So if you can understand what's going on in your brain when you are feeling flat or low, and I don't mean just a moment of disappointment, I didn't win the lotto on the weekend, you know, I don't mean that. I mean continual bouts of it, right? That you are continually low, or you wake up every morning with severe Mondayitis every single day, like you're wishing it was Saturday or Sunday and you just don't want to face work and life and children. And then the question is, what is missing? And if you are doing things to help, and we'll talk about why habits are so important, to help drive endorphins and dopamine, and you're happy with some connection, and it doesn't have to be the people you live with, it can be friends, and, you know, I know that if I connect to Lise, oxytocin releases, you know, like I can feel it. It's a reciprocal thing for us. And you're putting serotonin because you've got the sense of belonging or to community, and you're setting goals and you're achieving. You're doing some of those things, even really small habits, and you're still waking up every single day feeling soul destroyed. Then you should absolutely be talking to somebody about a chemical imbalance, because that is exactly what's missing in your brain. So why is your brain doing that? We don't know. We're not there yet. You've got to remember, we've been scanning a brain of a human that's alive for 30 odd years. Nothing. 50,000 years come back to us. We might know some stuff. And also, neuroscience is interesting, but it's not cool yet. Like, I obviously
think weird. It's cool. Yeah, it's weird that it's not.
Yeah, it's not cool yet, but I think it will get there. You know, there are more and more people that are interested. We've always looked at psychology and psychotherapy as being band-aids, but they're bloody well not. And so you do have to understand that there might be a time where you need medical support or medical intervention. And that is completely okay. But if we're just talking about masses, there's a couple of things, and as you know, I try to write notes. So in terms of how we fix it is, your brain doesn't know if it's a good or a bad habit. It just responds the same either way. So it'll release the endorphin, or it will release the oxytocin either way. In 2018, there was a study that suggests that the brain would decrease, so in complete opposite, it would decrease its frontal cortex elasticity or ability for neurons if you were in a flat or depressed state for too long. Again, recent study, quite small, but I think there'll be a fair amount of work done around that. And that was simply based on habits. And what they said was that if the amygdala regulates emotion.
If the what?
Amygdala, part of the brain, regulates emotion, then what happens when we're trying to form habits, and where do they sit and where do they fit? And what they said is that you need to recognize the strength between neurons, neuroplasticity, and the connection of habit forming and the release of chemical in your brain. And there's this thing called creating small cues or triggers. And we always thought, well, no, I don't know if we thought, there was a conversation and some study that said it takes 21 days to make a habit. That's not true.
No.
It takes 21 days to for your brain to recognize it as a habit, but it takes a minimum of 90 days for it to make a lifestyle change. And so there are these four stages of habit. It's cue, craving, response, and reward. And then they say you need reminders, routine, in order to get the reward. So you can't do all of those things without setting up the others. And so when the brain gets this high, it only ever gets it in the reward phase. It doesn't get it in the cue or the craving or the response. It only gets the reward and it only gets the high, the chemical high in the reward phase. So the reminder doesn't do anything for you. The routine itself doesn't do anything for you until it's your brain recognizes that as a permanent lifestyle change or a permanent habit. And then it will go, okay, this is good. I'm going to release something now. But apart from fight or flight sits in the reptilian brain, the rest of it takes a bloody lot of work. And so when you think about us in terms of having highs or lows, that's why they go for such a long period of time. The other thing to say is that if that part of the brain is connected to memory, then if you have had an opportunity, so greater than 90 days to do exercise, say, as a young person, say at 11, you were out there playing sport or dance or doing something you're passionate about, and went for a really long period of time. You danced for 2 years. Your brain is really clever because it has built that muscle memory, it's built that habit, and it holds it. And so that's why it's easier for you then to say, I'm going to create a habit of exercise, because your brain has already got it. And so your 90-day period will get your reward faster. For someone who's never had a habit of exercise and only ever had spasmodic exercise, do it for a week, do it for 2 weeks, do it for a month, didn't work, didn't do what I wanted it to do, so I'm not doing it anymore. The brain has not retained a muscle memory of a habit. And so it will take a full 90-day cycle in order for you to do that. So if you are feeling extremely low and you're thinking, well, if I'm low, how do I fix it? So exercise and nutrition are the starting point. And like I said, I wanted to set this up up front that you have not asked me to do that, Jess, because it sounds so fake given your platform and I don't want it to. But that is without question the starting point.
Yeah, I had already noted that too. You know, the question at the end of the find myself feeling shit down or low, what can I do?
Yeah.
I mean, I had one suggestion. Surprise, surprise, was exercise. You just going back on what you have just said though, are you saying that for someone who hasn't really had that regular habit of exercise, that they might not feel the actual reward? So say they exercise, you know, 3 times a week, then 4 times a week for the first 6 weeks, they still might not feel the kind of spark and enjoyment until at the sort of 90-day mark.
Correct. And isn't that correct? Right. They'll get spasmodic highs though, but that's crap, right? Because you're saying, oh, we'll feel better in a month and I feel great today. And I've just been for a run. I've been running for 3 weeks and I feel so much better.
Yeah.
But no, unfortunately, no. And I don't want to be an old Debbie Downer on that at all or do a whatever. I just think it's really important that we're very real about that because we talked about it in the first one about setting realistic expectations for anything that you're doing in your brain. And this is so important as to why you just have to rely on science and just do it because you're not going to, you still haven't got the routine. So your brain doesn't know to say, whoop, whoop, congratulations and release a whole lot of
feel good
endorphins or feel goods. Yeah, but it doesn't know how. So we know that exercise strengthens your heart, lowers your blood pressure, strengthens your bones, and improves muscle tone. That the other wins, right? When your brain sees those things, takes about 90 days, it goes, hang on a second, this is going to make me live longer. Congratulations. And it almost sends you a little ticker tape parade in your head says congratulations. And that's why you'll say, people will say, I can't get it to click, it doesn't click for me, I can't make it a habit, I'm great for a month, I'm great for 6 weeks, and then I let it go, life gets busy. And that's because it sends a message to the brain. Once it gets that message, it sends a message to the brain which releases endorphins, which gives me a reward for effect. So I go, oh, that worked for me, I'll better keep going. And all of a sudden, I don't have to rely on my most hated word of all, which is motivation. Rely on bloody motivation, which is bollocks. It doesn't even sit in a decent part of your brain. Don't get me started on my hate motivation. Discipline.
This doesn't surprise me.
No.
It sort of doesn't surprise me, knowing what I know and behind the scenes Movement Mama. It also really does not surprise me that it takes a lot longer than what people think. For a long time, we shied away from ever doing any 6-week challenges because It can take a long time. In 6 weeks, people think that this magic's going to happen, but we do it because it does actually help people stay accountable, and it can be a really good starting point for a long-term habit. But they
Correct.
have traditionally, say, I don't want to name and shame gyms or anything, but you know the kind of gym that will promote these 6 week things, and the person comes in, goes gung ho, leaves, and they're back where they started. And that's why we
Correct.
didn't do it for a while, but we know now that it does really help some people. But again, as the starting point for a longer term thing, getting to that
So the
90 day
reward
point
won't
is so
come.
hard.
The reward won't come. The reward won't come in your brain. The reward won't come physically. It doesn't come in any form for at least 3 months. And you think, well, I don't know if I want to sign up for 3 months. But you're not being asked to sign up for 3 months or a 6 week challenge. You're being asked to sign up for a lifestyle change. So it shouldn't
But
be about the time.
some people would say, "Oh, I feel great after 3 weeks." So what's that
Yeah.
about? Just mini
Mini
doses
doses.
type thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Micro dosing. Yep. And it's fleeting. Now, remember, I said if you have had exercise in your life before, you've created memory, you were a runner before, you went to the gym before, you did jazzercise. I remember jazzercise. I had
I didn't
very
do
exceptionally cool costume for jazzercise when I
I
was 11.
sure.
Yeah,
Yeah,
loved
I'm
it.
sure you did.
So it takes less time, right? It takes less time. But we're just talking about people who are very flat, very low. Don't have this as a habit formed, then unfortunately, the brilliant. Well, I don't think it's bad news because I just think it's real news. And if you can get real about it,
Agreed.
then you're setting yourself up for something that is doable. Now, the trick is you can do less of something, not none of something, and still create a better habit. So
Agreed.
if you eat half a block of chocolate every single night, just do two rows. Just do a row.
I love two rows.
Two rows is a good count, right? Two rows is a good count. If you come home and snack every single night the minute you walk in the door while you're cooking dinner, just snack less or eat a carrot and then eat whatever it is you're going to eat, right? So you can do the same thing and by just doing less. You don't have to do none. You can just take less or do less. And the other thing is, it's really important, is looking to add what is known as a 1 or 2 cycle goal. So if I say I'm currently really low, my mood's low, I'm flat, I'm low, I'm going to walk for 45 minutes on a Sunday and I'm going to do one Movement Mama workout in the week, right? From doing nothing, you think, oh, that's not going to help. Actually, it will help because your brain will still reward you because you set a goal and you achieved it. If it's one thing, if it's, I'm going to do the first 10 minutes of two workouts a week, of three workouts a week, your brain will still know that was the challenge. What you can't do is you can't trick your brain into saying, I'm going to do it 4 times a week and only doing it twice. You are continually telling yourself every Monday, four times, four times, four times, your brain won't achieve the goal. So what will happen is if the 90-day period hits, you will get the oxytocin from feeling connected, you know, hey, there's Jess smiling at me. You might get a little bit of endorphin, just as a micro hit of endorphin. You won't get dopamine because you set a goal and you didn't achieve it. And you won't necessarily get serotonin that comes from pride. So you're much less likely to last because you haven't established where all of these sit in terms of where you're ticking them off. And it's the same for children. So Sophia has got a lead role in the production. It's Monday week, I think it is. Yep, Monday week. So for 4 nights. And I have been massively talking to her about the fact that what will happen in terms of a high when she goes on stage for 4 nights, in terms of the dopamine hit and goal setting and achieving it. They've been going for 3.5 months. It's been massive. The oxytocin's huge in her body because she's got this little posse and community. When she gets on stage, she's going to go into the reptilian part of her brain and go through fight or flight, which will make her talk really fast, she'll crash down off that. And so, what are we doing to prepare her for what comes after that? And so, we've talked a lot about, you know, including a few weekly walks and doing a bit of this and doing a bit of that. Looking at nutrition, really important for her right now, so that when she comes off that, she's got something to replace it with, because otherwise she will hit a low. And if we think about high performance athletes, you know, the low that comes after that, an actor that's been working on a movie, the low that comes after that, you know, it's just everyday life things where we're setting ourselves up. And I guess that's the bit for me that I'm most passionate about, is that if we can start to teach our children or do better ourselves. We still get the lows, but we have a much more impactful way to manage them, which, which is the exercise and nutrition piece.
Would they be two key things? Would there be anything else? I mean, I suppose connection would be another thing, right?
Yeah,
massive. Which comes sometimes as alongside exercise.
Yeah.
But and it's a strain, isn't it? So if you think about social media world,
yeah, oxytocin, kind of, so love, trust, and friendship. I decided today whether I was going to do this or not because it's just so freaking deep, and I don't want to trigger anybody or upset anybody or offend anybody, and I certainly don't want people taking blame out of this because this isn't that we're the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
But we know that self-harm in our young people is directly related to oxytocin, and so young men particularly will self-harm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just a dark road, but they will. And take lives because of the lack of ability to get oxytocin in the body. And so the feeling of vulnerability, the lack of serotonin means lack of pride. Endorphins might come from a bit of sport, but if they weren't winning, then the endorphins get knocked, the serotonin pushes back because there wasn't pride. Like, it's all like a little fine, you know, I think if you could line them all up and in little bottles and give you an equal dose, we'd all be great, but we can't do that. We can, but it's medicated. So oxytocin's super important during puberty.
So remind us again where oxytocin, what's oxytocin responsible for?
Love, trust, and friendship.
Right.
And so really important in our young people that we are building that up. And so often we see people who have been, God, we get so deep, man, I hate this part of it, who have been either, you know, had their heart broken or first love and heartbroken, or seeing things on social media such as exclusion, everyone else is at a party and I'm not, and it's this repeated Snapchat, you know, evolution of I'm cool and you're not, and we've starved them of oxytocin, and repeated patterns of that are incredibly damaging to our young people. So making sure that your young people, particularly during puberty, are getting a really good dose of oxytocin is really important. So love, trust, and friendship. And from you can do those things. But last week we talked about it. If you're always, and I'm not talking, I'm definitely the parent, like I'm not going into friend territory with my kids, but there are ways in which I can absolutely build them up by language in the limbic system, which can help release some oxytocin just to keep them really high, so that when they're starved of it from their peers, because their peer measure is greater than their parental measure during puberty. So you've got to make sure there's plenty going in there. And what I call peripheral relationships, so aunties, uncles, you know, grandparents, any of those people who they've got to, you know, my little Finn idolises my brother, he's like the coolest dude on earth, right? So he can spend an hour with him and his oxytocin tank can be helped to be topped up. Is really important. If you go through the route of nutrition, and again, really important, so in terms of building those things up, healthy proteins, vitamin B, vitamin D, magnesium, zinc, taking a dose of magnesium can definitely help. Iron, selenium, calcium, omega-3s. They are primarily out of diet. You will get endorphins and dopamine though. So we're not going to get oxytocin out of diet.
Unfortunately.
Go and eat a block of chocolate. Doesn't give us that. We think it's a love affair, but actually it's not.
It's so interesting, like hearing you say the brain doesn't know the difference between like a good habit and a bad habit is what you said, right?
Yeah.
And again, that's like not surprising either, because I don't know how to explain this, but exactly about my habit with chocolate, like I suppose I don't eat a ridiculous amount of it for it to be deemed really a bad habit, but you know, technically speaking, it's not the most nutritious food. However, it feels like a good habit for me because of how I so positively view it, but also I probably come from a background of like such a bad relationship to it 10 years ago, that
correct.
It's really positive that it is seen as positive by my brain or something.
Yeah, and it's balance. It's balanced by your brain now, right? But it is still giving you a chemical high.
Yeah.
And so you are...
Even though technically it's junk, kind of.
I've lost you, Jess.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can again now. Yeah, even though it's technically not the best food you could be eating.
Yeah.
It's technically, well, no, it's not technically. It's nutritionally zero, isn't it? Right. There's no nutritional value in that, but it is giving you a high. There is no doubt about it. Yeah. And so the longer you do it for, more than 90 days, you start getting that really instant kick or reward. But I was going to say, I'm often fascinated. So I couldn't eat a whole block of chocolate. It starts to make me feel a bit seedy. But I am the chief of grazing. I think I was a sheep in a past life, to be honest. Just out in the paddock going constantly, recycling it, right? And so I know that grazing gives me a massive hit. Which I value. So if I'm low, if I'm flat, if you know there's tension in the house, if there's tension at work, if I'm just tired, then I will graze the backside out of life, and that is so bad for me. Like, it is so bad. I could eat 7,000 calories in a day by grazing. You know, there's nothing good about it, but it absolutely rewards me. And so that's the thing with depression or low mood or packing the shits or any of those things, is that we go for what makes us feel good to get the chemicals released. And if your habits are, remember I said they don't know if they're good or bad, your brain's just saying that's a habit. I've seen this before. It's got muscle memory. It tells me this is good. Oh, okay, I like that. It's gonna keep me safe. It's not keeping me safe, right? It's not keeping me safe. And so making small changes in little things, like if you think 90 days is a long time, I agree it is. But if you want to start today, like that's the thing, right? What I would say is, if you know that school holidays are in 4 weeks and you're going away and you've got friends staying or something's happening, then be really mindful about setting 4 days a week for the whole entire time, because it's maybe not doable. So picking a time period is really important. It doesn't mean you can't start. It just means you need to be much more realistic about it. Because if you want to release serotonin, pride, and dopamine from goal setting, then you need to make sure that it's actually doable. It's not just a nice idea. Because you won't stick at it, you won't get the reward, and you won't be able to do it. So making those small steps when you're really low is super important. So thinking, how can I add magnesium or zinc to my diet? Like, how can I increase my protein? Would be a simple thing. And then understanding that the brain is going to send you the same messages and release that, whether it is a good or a bad habit, as soon as it's ingrained. Like I said, it's kind of like a default, right? You're already low, you're already down. And if you think about depression over weight, that's a prime example of how we regain weight.
What do you mean?
So we go on a diet. I hate that word, but we do. We go on a diet and we control what we eat for a 3 or 4 week period, a 6 week period. We control it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't give us the reward or recognition or experience we're expecting. Remember, we oversold the goal. So we oversold the goal to, I'm going to lose 10 kilos in 6 weeks.
We didn't
get any of the release of chemicals. We might have had the odd endorphin if we did, you know, a micro endorphin if we did the odd run. The goal setting was 10 kilos, so we didn't get the dopamine because we didn't lose it. We definitely didn't have love and trust because we didn't trust the process, so now we're grumpy with that. And we didn't get serotonin because there's no pride in achievement, so now we've got none of those things. We now go, it didn't work, and so we default to the habits we had before,
and self-sabotage.
Self-sabotage, and we default to them, and we get all this gush of all of these chemicals in our body. And so we keep going and keep going and keep going. And then we gain weight and we do no exercise. And then we go, well, how did that happen? Yeah, well, it happened because our brain's got a wee addiction to chemicals. And like I said, it's not an addiction that you can't get rid of. It's not like that at all. But it's chemical dependency. That's what it is, rather than addiction. It's dependency. And so it's asking you to give in and give those things. And your 90-day period, your habits just happen to be bad habits. I hate that word, good and bad. Not impactful habits for a good life.
It is interesting, but it is also reassuring of the fact that I kind of, not that I am perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it just is so in line with how we view things on, if we're thinking about exercise, wellness and nutrition especially.
Yeah.
You know, singing home the tune of like, you know, okay, it's 90 days, that's a long time. But also, if you actually want to live a life where you are quite content and across all aspects of life, potentially,
yeah,
that those habits or the exercise and the nutrition piece for sure
help
while 90 days
with the highs and lows.
And it's got to go far beyond 90 days.
Yeah.
So 90 days is nothing compared to the rest of my life.
Like, no, it's so, the rest of your life. What it's asking you to do, though, is it's asking you to send messages through neurotransmitters. That's effectively what it's asking you to do, that create long-term change in behavior where those chemicals are released, because they're released all the time because that's the only way you behave. And I'm not saying you never eat chocolate or you only live on lettuce. We're not saying that at all. What we're saying is actually these are the how do you fix it is, if you want the brain to respond to chemicals, then you want to build patterns and pathways that are good for longevity, for healthy life, for a sound mind, for your ability to be a solid parent. And there's no doubt about it. If I've been away a bit for work and just eaten whatever was on the go at the time, I'm always shooty when I come home.
Yeah.
And Mick will say, you're tired. I'm not tired. I've had the same amount of sleep. I didn't eat right and I didn't exercise.
Yeah,
impactful. So my brain's been starved and I've been away from my family. So my brain's had no oxytocin from the kids for a few days. You know, all of those really simple things. And so when people say to me, oh, look, I'm low or I'm flat or I'm struggling with depression, I always say, God, measure it. That's the first thing. Measure it. Is it having a significant impact on your ability to connect to others? And if it is, go to the doctor and talk to somebody, because that's step one. Mm-hmm. If it's not, then make a 90-day plan to say, actually, for the next 90 days, here's where I'm going to do this. On Mondays, I am going to, you know, do a Move at Mama workout either before or after work, whenever I can fit it in. And on a Sunday, I'm going for a long walk with my kids and my partner or the dog or the whatever, or my best friend. And that is a given. And then I'm going to add two food goals, two nutritional goals in, and see what 90 days delivers. And I will guarantee you that those four chemicals have been released into your brain at the end of that time. But in 6 weeks, they won't be. So don't be measuring it. And you could take the 4 week challenge and just repeat it four times. There's 4 months of it, and you have all of a sudden created these really good habits. And so what goes on in your brain is a chemical imbalance. That's the short answer. That's the short answer.
We should wrap up, but I could probably keep talking, but it's interesting, very interesting. I had something to say, I can't quite remember now, I've lost it. But it's like there's two problems. There's one problem is like it feels like it's kind of human nature or something, like we can't help ourselves.
Yep. We're
just kind of like throwing self-sabotage into this,
yep.
you know. And there was one other thing and I can't really remember.
Well, it's also where to start when you're low is really hard, right? So where to start?
Yeah.
So committing to a friend and setting a realistic goal, knowing it's 90 days, understanding you're not going to get those hits for the next 90 days. I might still get them from the chocolate bar because I'm going to leave that in there. I don't have to ditch that. Oh, sorry, that's another really important point is I don't have to ditch all the things that do give me high while I'm building new patterns. I don't have to ditch them. I can phase them out as I've rebuilt the new ones, but I don't have to ditch them.
Yes. Yeah. Like that. I was just going back to what you did say quickly about, you know, if you know you've got school holidays at this point and this and that, like, I think that's so important to realize that, you know, we always work to this weekly model of often with our goal setting, that we work Monday to Sunday and like, you know, week to week, but, you know, taking some time to consider that some weeks will look different and adjusting that in our brains so that we still set ourselves up for success, even though week four looks very different to week one.
Yeah, absolutely. And in trying to understand about what I'm doing to get, and we can write a little thing up if we need to around, just in the notes, I can type something in, that endorphins are reward for effort, that dopamine is goal setting, it's fight or flight, it's in your reptilian brain, that serotonin is pride and belonging, and oxytocin is love, trust, and friendship. And so when you say to your teenager, we're taking you to, you know, Grands in Palmerston North, I like Palmerston North, by the way, but we're taking you to Grands in Palmerston North for 2 weeks, and they're all depressed and grumpy, it's because you've actually starved them of oxytocin. You didn't mean to, but if they've got very little connection to Grand, and they're in a place and away from their friends, and then you're trying to pull their phone off them, like, it's all of those things, you're trying to starve them from something. So it's like, okay, if I'm doing that, what can I replace it with? How can I top up the oxytocin tank? It's exactly the same for you with your 90-day plan, is how can I continue to keep those things being topped up while I create a new habit that will eventually give me this organically? And so when I'm low, I won't go, oh my God, I'm so low, I'm going to eat half a tub of ice cream and 4 cookies. It's actually, I'm low. Actually, I'm going to make some chia seed pudding for breakfast tomorrow. I need to start off with a high protein, and I'm going to set my alarm a little bit earlier. I haven't got time to spend a whole, you know, 25 minutes with Jess, but I'm going to have 10 minutes with Jess. And so instantly I've set a goal and my body goes, oh, that's something I remember feeling. I remember that. I like it. And it releases the endorphins. Crazy, hey? It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the thing I get frustrated about, is that too, we don't talk about it. It's not knowledge or common language that people just can understand it, and it's really important for our teenagers to understand how we get equal bouts of this, not just equal bouts of not just extreme bouts of endorphins or extreme bouts of oxytocin. We need to get a really robust measure of all of it. Like I said,
really,
I wish we could line up a dose.
I think if you can write at some stage in the comments, maybe that kind of split of those four, that would be helpful for people to remember.
And again, anyone who's got questions, reach out. I generally try and get to them. Might take me a few days, but I'll happily try and get to them if I can. So in terms of wrapping up, if you're low, it's chemical imbalance. We know it is. If it's severe enough, go to a doctor. If there's something you can do about it, set a 90-day plan, because that's how long it's going to take.
Cool.
And don't eliminate all the good things and all the contact with friends and all those other things while you're trying to do it.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I've really noticed lately that, like, I can go about thinking that I'm getting a social connection, but actually I'm not. And, like, I know that my, like, positivity dial is, like, down, and that it's and it's uplifted if I get that connection face to face.
And honestly, if you can make a friend through Move It Mama, there's a couple of lovely Move It Mamas. Sarah's one of them, who will just message me, you know, like, well, I'll write, I mean, oh, great week, and they'll go, oh,
there's about 5,500.
But just a buddy, someone who will make a comment on your comments, someone who you don't even have to know well, but just the person who, or, you know, in the morning, the person who says, you know, cute everyone rather than just to you. That is the means of, I love that. I'm like, that's the point of oxytocin, right? If somebody, it's like, oh, hi, Deb, you're there. Nice to see you. It is this connection. It is this connection and friendship. So if you're thinking about doing 90 days of miming and you need someone to say good job, then, you know, let us know. We'll be there to say good job. And it's a genuine good job. It's a genuine connection, because that might be the thing you need to make you stick there for 90 days. Yeah.
You're on to something. I tell you what, I mean, if there's anything over the last month that we've learned, I mean, we already knew about how amazing this membership is, but it is, like, I was talking about it with a few friends today. It's just unbelievable the amount of I don't know, love, support, but camaraderie, and, like, yeah, it's insane. It's so amazing. So
we need a Sunday workout. Are doing it for Dan's Sunday workout, I reckon. And we've got to get 1,000 people on there.
Okay, you take it.
No, I'm just there though. I'm going. Yeah. No.
Well.
No. No, but yeah, you could do double for Dan, Zoom. You and Shah. That'd be quite cool. Split screen. That'd be good. Get amongst it.
I'm thinking of doing one over Zoom, so you'd be on camera too.
Oh yeah, love it.
Along with hundreds of other mems.
Yeah. No, I'm there. I'm there.
All right, we'll talk about that and we'll get it sorted. Okay. Thank you
thanks very everyone
much for your time, as always. Yeah, thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you next week for one more.
One more.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.